We should have just followed the downward trend of the stock after the fifth time buying and hitting SNDK lower. It opened up, down big, and went lower. It never bounced intraday. Steve lost so much money he received a call from higher-ups concerning his account balance. I will leave out how much I lost, but it was considerably less. I had numerous opportunities to double down, and I passed. As much as this day was a rip, I did live to play another day. I would have blown up my trading account if I had doubled down. SNDK never bounced. See figures 4.4 and 4.5 on your bonus material. It closed near the low of day, near 46.50-ish. Steve hit the very bottom. The story gets much more painful. Less than 2 months later, SNDK was 30 points higher, see figure 4.5, than where we were hitting it. We are intraday traders, so we would not have held it overnight and captured this move. See, we were right after all. But this is not relevant. SNDK was going to trade lower on this day. Skippy. Some would rather be right than make money. These are the types who conveniently forget that the market can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent. One of the smarter guys we have traded with over the past decade, let's call him Skippy, is a perfect example. The guy knew everything about the markets. He was a hopeless market intellectual, enamored with fundamentals, P.E. ratios, and market theory. And if you didn't know this, then he would make sure that you did. He was from one of those European countries where the stereotype is that everyone is blonde and of old Teutonic stock. During the internet explosion, Skippy would chirp about Yahoo being overvalued at $50, yet it went to $500, split adjusted. Skippy would warn that Broadcom was overbought, and it had another tenfold to go. He instructed that Amazon would be out of business in a few years. I am loving my new Kindle purchased from Amazon not a month ago. Skippy focused on shorting during the entire internet bubble. Oops. And for those interested, Skippy doesn't trade anymore. Predictions are fine, but the price action of the market or stock is most important for intraday traders like us. If you have what you believe is an irrefutable trading opinion, and the price action does not confirm your bias, then do not make the trade. Predictions absent validation from the price action are not advisable if you wish to enjoy a long intraday trading career. We were watching tape on a Saturday one day. A hard-working new trader asked, "Bella, would that have been a place to double down?" I had the tape stopped. I responded like a judge while pounding his gavel. "Please never ask me that question again. Doubling down does not work for the intraday trader. I have tried it. 85% of the time you will profit when you double down, but the 15% of the time you are wrong, you will get smoked. The losses during these trades will far outweigh the gains from the 85%. The math does not work. And I even tried to master this technique during a range-bound market where this should work best. Just forget about it. It is a waste of your mental energy to master doubling down." And then we restarted the tape. So for every trade, you must be prepared for anything. Remember my SNDK disaster. Play defense if a stock trades against your exit price. The unexpected will occur. Live to play another day. Respect the markets. Master basic trading plays. When you begin, you must master basic trading plays. You cannot trade 70,000 SKF until you first learn how to trade a support play in a MCD or BAC with 100 shares. To learn this play, you must develop if-then statements for this trade. There are subsets of a support play, not just one. Trading is not learning to buy at a specified level and then just holding. Sorry, it is not that simple. If it were that easy, there would be no need for trading mentors, this book, and me. Let's talk about a day I traded STI. It held the bid at 16 and never dropped. See figure 4.6 on your bonus material. This is an easy trade. 16 was a level. We got long and we held until the uptrend was broken. On the same day, MCD hit support at 60. Jay Thoma had offered this support level the day before on CNBC's Fast Money Halftime Report. In true Jay Thoma form, he came back from his appearance reporting how stunning Michelle Caruso Cabrera was in person. We bought MCD at 60. The level dropped. See figure 4.7 on your bonus material. I hit the bids. The specialist came right back to the bid at 60, and I re-entered long 2,000 shares. Again, on the very same day, V was in play. 70 was resistance. V met this level. V would hold the 70 level a bit and then drop. See figure 4.8 on your bonus material. I bought 70 and then hit the bids when the stock dropped the 70 bid. I recognized that the buyers would drop out of the stock and then come back to the 70 level. The buyers would not immediately come back to the 70 bid like MCD did. They would drop by down to 69.85-ish and then slowly buy V back towards 70. So I made an adjustment. I bought at 69.85 when the buyers dropped it out, and I held till V showed weakness near 71. Chop. This was the very same trading day. This was the same trading play, a support play. MCD, V, and STI each offered different subsets for this play. Any trader can make the STI trade. Some can make the MCD trade. Few can make the V trade. As Alexander, who sits to my right on our desk, would kid, "Who is better than you, Bella?" And I have different if-then statements for each subset of this support play. For STI, my if-then statement was, if the 16 bid holds with significant volume, then get long and hold. If 16 drops, then exit. For MCD, my if-then statement was, if 60 drops, then exit. If the buyer reappears automatically, then this is just a shakeout and rebuy. For V, my if-then statement was, if the buyer is dropping out the bid, then buy into the dropout and then hold until the uptrend is broken. And this is just for this market, with one play. I have a thick playbook of trading plays. I am always looking to add plays. In fact, I think my next book is going to be called The Intraday Trader's Playbook. Watch your back, Dan Brown. But the market will change, and with just these three simple subsets of a support play, the market will demand that I make adjustments. If the market is weak, then I will need to see more buying on the bid to profitably trade this setup. If the market is in an uptrend, then I will be quicker to buy when I perceive strength. I use certain trades from my quiver more during specific markets. Since the spring of 2009 to the time I am writing this book, support plays have been rewarded. The market was in an uptrend. So I focus on support plays, buying pullbacks, etc. If the market is like the fall of 2008, I will not make many support plays. I will strictly use my momentum trades. If the market is range-bound, then I will use more of my fade trades, counter-trend plays. But I have mastered all of these plays. Notice that none of this involves trading setups that you cannot understand. There is not some abstract, ethereal, mathematical formula attached to each trade. There are if-then statements for basic trading plays. Basically, there is a risk management system attached to statistically profitable trades based upon how I trade. I don't pretend to be something I am not. I know what works for me. At the end of our training program, we roll out statistically profitable trading plays for our trainees. We suggest if-then statements like the ones I just described for these setups. Our new traders tweak these if-then statements so they are best for them. As the market changes, our traders must again tweak these plays. Consistently profitable traders adapt. But when you start, you must master basics. Becoming a CPT will not depend upon you mastering complicated new trading plays. These are plays that traders have used for over a decade. They have always worked, will always work, and need to be mastered. Work on them. Learn to execute orders quickly. Most prop players trade electronically. We are not on the NYSE trading floor or in a live futures pit. We do not call our broker to execute our trades. Everything is done on a keyboard, and we must train ourselves to have fast fingers. The single most important reason why former NYSE floor traders, hedge fund traders, and institutional traders fail to successfully transition to electronic trading is their lack of speed entering orders. You can't be that guy in our game waiting for a stock to trade below an important level, and then it does, and not be quick enough to get short at a good price. Practice your execution skills daily. Create speed drills for yourself. Our traders practice 15 minutes every day during their initial training to get faster on the keyboard. Being fast and light is an advantage that the intraday trader must learn to exploit. We can go from long to short very quickly and easily. That is, unless we are not fast. As a way of incentive, the world markets will only continue to become increasingly electronically based. As such, learning to be fast with your orders is a skill that you will have to master. For Vanguard to unwind a few million share position may take weeks, but you are not Vanguard. You can exit your positions with the tap of a keyboard. You can flip your position in less than a second. Understand that this is a huge advantage. The good intraday trader maximizes this advantage over other larger market players. Point and click. Let me offer an example. Steve and I used to sit next to a trader who entered his orders by pointing and clicking with a mouse. I had heard some talking head on CNBC bragging about how he was talking with his hand on his mouse to enter a position while he was being interviewed. To the active intraday trader, this is suicide. This would be like taking a 50-pound weight jacket, attaching it to Kobe's back, then seeing how well he plays. This is a huge disadvantage. This very solid trader would sometimes trade the same stocks as us. One time, we were all trading MON. It was in play and near an important intraday level, one where we are short as long as MON is below this level and long if MON is above the level. MON was in an intraday uptrend, but this level was offering significant resistance such that we were temporarily short. This recent resistance with significant volume trumped the intraday uptrend indicated by our charts. And we were all short. I was short, Steve was short, and Point and Click was short. The level lifted. Steve got flat, then long 3K. I got flat and long 2K. Point and Click was still short, and cursing that he could not get filled. In fact, after he covered, he smashed his keyboard into pieces. Impressive keyboard smashing, by the way. There were only a few letters left. Old school traders will tell you that if you are going to smash your keyboard, then do it well. Smash the living crap out of the keyboard. It should be rendered useless. If not, then take your sissy keyboard smashing elsewhere, because now you are just making noise and distracting the rest of us. Now, this was not a case of us, Steve and me, taking Point and Click's prints. Steve and I could have bought 5K each if we wanted. There was that much available. He was just much slower than the rest of the marketplace. MON traded up another 50 cents where we sold. Steve made $1,500. I made $1,000. Why does he always have to make more than me? And Point and Click lost $1,000. We were all using the same technique of short below and flip above the level, but the fast traders made money and the slow lost. I presently sit around 20-somethings right out of college, former athletes. Not a week goes by where we are trading the same stock. I get stock that they cannot because I'm fast on the keyboard. This is usually followed with my shaking my head at these slowpokes with this line. Guys, I am 39 years old. How is it possible that I can get stock and you cannot? There is no substitute for speed. Fine-tune your focus. Steve is one tough SOB. If you met him for the first time, you would walk away concluding he was a Wharton intellectual. He is so damn smart. But Steve will grind it out like Tiger. He will take a loss and fight back. The day for him doesn't end until the bell rings. A bad start is just an opportunity to make a comeback. You would have to literally drag him away from his trading station to end his fight. Steve's trading mentor, a market veteran, said about Steve, "I've never seen anyone so comfortable on a trading floor." And he fights with every tick, every day, sick or not, tired or alert, hungry or well-fed. Do you know how many times he has picked himself up after the close and announced he was heading to get some lunch? And he doesn't miss one tick in the 10 different stocks he is watching on a given day. He can tell you important prices from 2 weeks ago. Like Derek Jeter, you cannot tell from watching him if he is having a bad day or a career trading day. This is what I mean by focus. During the fall of 2008, we traded every tick during the day. Dr. Momentum was not 6 months into his trading career. At the end of the day, he looked like he had been through a war. He had to leave at 4:30 every night because he had nothing left. 23 and less than 6 months into his career, he had focused so intently during the trading day that by the close, he was wiped. This is the focus required by the market. Control your emotions. Me. I have noticed that you have trouble controlling your emotions. Notorious underperformer. I do, but I'm getting better. Me. Okay, let's work on this. For the next 3 days, keep a list in your trading journal of all the things that set you off. Send me that list and then we will discuss it. Notorious underperformer. Today I told myself not to get upset about things and I traded better. Me. This is not something you can will away. You have to work on developing the skill of controlling your emotions. This is not a big deal. Most intraday traders at one point must work on this. I can't tell you how many times I've had a conversation similar to this one. Active intraday traders deal with rejection more than longer time frame traders. We trade more, so we are wrong more. If a losing trade sets you off, then this can affect your trades going forward. And this is dangerous. We call this trading on tilt. You are in a temporary emotional state where you are not thinking as clearly as you can. You are angry or frustrated or disappointed, and then you make decisions that you normally would not, and rips result. In short, you manifest trading data that does not reflect your ability. A few days later, notorious underperformer, a bright Ivy League graduate capable of much better trading results, sent me his list of things that set him off. They were a typical list. One of them was getting upset when he exited for a loss greater than he expected. I suggested the following visualization exercise, shortened considerably here. Find a quiet area. Breathe deeply in and out for a few minutes until you are calm. Then visualize not getting out of a stock where you expected. In as much detail as possible, remember the last trade like this that set you off. Then expose the logic of getting upset. Something like, if I let this upset me, then I will miss easy trades in this stock about to come. Then breathe in and out deeply again until you are calm. Repeat this process a few times. I recommend you read Dr. Steenbarger for more about trading psychology and this topic. My sentiment about learning trading psychology can be summed up with this past tweet. After reading Tweet Steenbab, often I consider whether I should end my future blogs with, "Thanks for reading, but for a really awesome blog, visit TraderFeed." Controlling your emotions is necessary to recognize your trading potential. Most on our desk spend 15 minutes every day working on their mental weaknesses utilizing visualization exercises. You will not rid these issues in one session. It takes weeks of repeated practice. But you can get better. And remember, this issue is so important that G-Man went from "I quit" to head trader to partner by improving controlling his emotions. The good news. Mike, that all seemed very difficult. As Teddy Roosevelt inspired, "Nothing in the world is worth having or worth doing unless it means effort." The good news is that you can learn it all. This is your opportunity to do something great. Many intraday traders have successfully navigated very different markets. Whether it was 1999 or 2002, the intraday trader has been able to profit. Most got killed during the 2008 market collapse, but for the intraday trader, this was our best year since 2000. I share the reticence of Andy Kirshner of the Kirshner Trading Group to talk about doing well that year. You have to be careful of how much you talk about it. Everybody else is having tough times. You feel a little bit guilty about it when everybody else is losing money. But the reward of fully developed trading skills is that we can profit in any market, and we get to do so doing the very best job in the world. Now let's examine past traders who have failed and why. They make for some entertaining stories and trading lessons. Chapter 5. Why Traders Fail. You are at a local bar drinking with your buddies and cannot take your eyes off its prettiest patron. You approach confidently and start working this lovely young woman. After leading with some of your best material, she asks, "So what do? You smile, pause, and answer coolly with a George Clooney-esque twinkle in your eye, "I am a trader." The young woman flips her hair, unconscientiously wets her lips, and now focuses her eyes squarely on you.
"Really?"
The evening ends at worst with this young woman's phone number in your iPhone, all in full view of your drinking pals. The failure rate is too high in this industry, with too many traders failing for the wrong reasons. There, I said it. And this is all unnecessary. In this chapter, I will share my experiences working with traders who failed, or simply should have never started, in order to help future and present traders avoid these obvious but common mistakes. Reasons for failure include not listening to the market, failing to hit stocks that trade against you, a need to be right, the unrealistic learning curve, thinking as an investor instead of a trader, and simply not loving trading. The last reason seems obvious, but there are pikers who grab a seat in our industry without a passion behind what they are doing. They become traders for the perceived social prestige of being a trader, as in the opening scene I mentioned before, which, by the way, I have personally observed on numerous occasions. Trading is only for those with an ability to sustain their energy of working day in and day out at their craft, the discipline of trading. Trading is only for elite performers committed to a long journey of ups and downs where you learn just how good you can be as a trader. The others? Well, they are in this chapter. They don't listen to the market. Too many new traders think they know how to start. If Jim Cramer can throw tantrums on TV and be right half the time, why can't I? Let me give you a sports analogy. I love golf, and despite its snooze-inducing pace to some, I love watching it on TV. But just because I watch it on TV, like I might catch Cramer in the evenings, does not mean I have the slightest idea about how to become a professional golfer. One of the more common statements from those trained on our desk is, "I wish I would have just listened earlier." I do not offer this quote for any other reason than to save you some aggravation. You have a choice. You can spend the first 6 months of your trading career not learning anything because you don't listen, or you can start the right way. After 6 months, you can possess the skills that you need to trade profitably in any market, from anywhere, and for the rest of your trading career. Or you can be frustrated, unskilled, with a decidedly negative trading account. Do not be one of the thousands who needlessly loses excessive amounts of money when he begins, and worse still, never develops career-making trading skills. We will share in the following sections some stories of mainly former traders who already made the most common mistakes, so you don't have to. As a result, you will vault ahead of 95% of those who seek to trade. One of the written lectures most important for the new traders who I train is, "Be the best listener." If you are fortunate enough to join a solid trading firm, first things first, listen. And here's another reminder. When you begin your trading career, despite all the books you've read, charts you've examined, balance sheets you've picked apart, or profits you've experienced in your PA, you do not know what you are doing. Listen and learn. Evan Lazarus, Chief Information Officer at T3 Capital, teaches that this first stage is unconscious incompetence. you do not know what you are supposed to know, and you do not know this. The market is our boss, and punishes those who disobey. Let consistently profitable, experienced traders share the rules communicated to them from our boss, the market. There is a direct correlation at prop firms between those who listen best and those who perform best. Our top five new traders presently were the best listeners during their training class. At the firm that taught me, the best traders were those who hung around the best traders, hungry to listen. One of our best listeners, Dr. Momentum, parrots lines that I have spoken months ago. I walk away astounded after a chat with Dr. Momentum, thinking to myself, how the hell did he pick that up? Dr. Momentum had understood an incredibly complex idea taught to me by the market that I conveyed in passing weeks ago. With such superior listening skills, it is no surprise that he has grown into a solid trader. How to be the best listener. Lesson number one. Be the best listener on your desk. My favorite political show is Hardball, hosted by Chris Matthews. Mr. Matthews recently offered some great advice for new traders and those who are single, unbeknownst to him, in his new book, Life's a Campaign. When he was a Yank at Oxford, Bill Clinton had a reputation as someone who knew how to get the girls. A fellow Rhodes Scholar who was waging a losing battle for the woman of his dreams asked Clinton for advice. "Have you ever thought about listening?" the expert from Hope, Arkansas, told him authoritatively. Later in the book, Clinton used the same tactic to score good grades. As a college student at Georgetown, Bill was famous for being able to read the professors. He would wow his classmates by predicting just what questions would be on the exams. That's because he listened in class, really heard what the professor most cared about. This is something I've been telling my kids. Pay attention to what the teacher personally is trying to teach. To use Clinton's prowess with academics and females as an analogy, the market is our professor. A prop firm mentor, in turn, shares what our professor has taught us in the last decade or so. It's not that we are egomaniacs and demand to be the center of attention on our respective desk, though it is our money they're trading. Personally, I couldn't care less if a new trader listens to me. But I am just sharing what the market has taught me over the past 12 years. We ask that they listen because if they don't, their chance of failure dramatically increases. I don't mean to be cavalier about this. Let me be clear for those who may have missed my point. The market has rules. Experienced prop traders have spent many hours, days, months, and years learning these rules, at times very painfully. I've spoken endlessly to new traders about what happens when one disobeys these rules, i.e., Mother Market reaches into your pocket and takes what is hers, and she doesn't give it back. Trent, great guy, poor listener, former trader. If you are still a non-believer, let me share an anecdote with you. One of my favorite traders was, and I emphasize was, a guy we will call Trent. Think swingers. I really did like Trent. Everyone liked Trent. I was so fond of him that I still remember the sleepless nights following his departure. He was the first trader to ever fail with SMB. As an aside, my favorite Trent story also involves G-Man. We all went out for St. Patrick's Day on the Upper East Side. My alma mater, UConn, was playing Albany in the first round of the NCAA tournament. The atmosphere could not have been any finer for a bunch of alpha male traders. College hoops, beers, wings, and a barroom full of women. Trent invited his girlfriend and her sister, who just happened to be an ex-Miss Florida. Who doesn't enjoy the company of an ex-Miss fill in the southern state? Miss Florida apparently fell for G-Man immediately. Sensing that there was chemistry, Trent arranged for all four of them to go to dinner. But the dozen or so beers G-Man had imbibed did him no favors. Over dinner, G-Man blurted to Miss Florida that he had a girlfriend. When these words came out of G-Man's mouth, Trent apparently looked at him like he had committed a felony. "I just laid you up with Miss Florida, and this is the thanks you give me?" read the expression on Trent's face. "I don't care if you are the head trader. This is one awesome risk-reward opportunity you just sabotaged." Sadly, tragically, G-Man never did get together with Miss Florida, since we severed ties with Trent not too long afterward. But why did Trent fail? As much as we enjoyed his company and his access to former beauty queens, he didn't listen to us. Or more accurately, he didn't listen to the market. During one of our midday meetings on risk management, we discussed a subtopic on the danger of trading heavily shorted stocks. In particular, we mentioned Travelzoo, symbol TZOO. I strongly recommended staying away from TZOO because its short interest was too high, a ridiculous 62%. When stocks are under heavy short pressure, anxious market makers and opportunistic buyers like to engage in short squeezes that start and end without warning. The stock often spikes and drops, then spikes and spikes and spikes, and then plummets. Under these conditions, the stock is unreadable, unpredictable, and too dangerous for a new trader. Almost like trapeze artists and fire eaters at the circus telling kids, "Do not try this at home." Not 3 minutes after the end of our meeting did I sit down at my trading station and take notice of how our desk was doing. Trent had red all over my risk monitor. I clicked to see his positions. This Miss Florida-toting favorite of his trading peers was long 800 shares of TZOO. Did I not just say to stay away? It would have been one thing if he was up on the trade, but it was 2 points against him, and the stock never rebounded. Well, that was certainly a rip, and that was the last trade that Trent ever made, though he does have a good job now. If you want to recognize your potential, then be the best listener on your desk or in your trading community. Listen to experienced traders. Listen to what the market has taught us. Boy Genius. Let me offer another anecdote that any trainer at every prop firm has experienced. The names, dates, and locations may vary, but the ending and reason for termination is always the same. Some extraordinarily bright new prop traders possess poor listening skills. One of the brightest traders I trained had poor listening skills. Come to think of it, it wasn't that they were poor, they were non-existent. Let's call this new trainee Boy Genius. More accurately, he did not listen to the senior traders, the head traders, or the partners, including me. And not listening to me incurs a hefty penalty. If I sense a new trader is not listening, well, I initiate a discussion behind closed doors that is rather unpleasant. In this meeting, I am brutally honest, like all good coaches must be. And despite all the love I have shown in the recruiting process, I am not shy about telling you that if you do not pick up the pace, we will move forward without you. It is my job to tell the truth. Boy Genius was academically bright. His math SAT score was 800, and he had graduated from a top-ranked liberal arts school in the Northeast. As a former college athlete, he had a history of competitiveness. Interestingly, he had paid the bills as a professional blackjack gambler for close to a year. Yeah, I'm not sure how this is possible either. Before I can continue offering you the perfect example of how not to start as a trader, I must give some background about how new traders often get started at a prop firm. When a new trader begins trading live, they are usually assigned a mentor. This mentor reviews the trainee's trades after every close. The mentor will check whether you are in the right stocks, over-trading, following the trend, keeping losses small, and answer specific questions. There is a mentoring document that you must fill out after every close on these points. The new trader must focus on skill development and forming good habits when he first begins. Losing money is not a big deal when you start. However, it is not acceptable to make certain fundamental mistakes. You hit the cutoff man in baseball. You box out the player you are defending in hoops. You keep your head still in golf. And in our sport, fundamentals must be honored by the new trader. For example, letting stocks trade against your exit price or trading too many shares from the start are not acceptable mistakes. If a mentor spots this, reprimands are likely. And with this newbie, he was letting stocks trade against him. Boy Genius's punishment? The demo. There is no greater insult on a prop desk than being banished to the demo for a day. It's probably worse than getting demoted from the majors to the minors. Cowboys have to learn to ride a horse before a bull, so to speak. As intraday traders, we have a distinct advantage over institutional traders in that we can exit our losing positions instantly. Before every trade, we must determine our exit plan for if a stock trades against us. A new trader might start out trading one standard lot, 100 shares. 100 shares is low risk for the firm, and although it's low reward for the trader, he needs to start somewhere. Many great traders started out on one lot. If that loss barrier hits, they really have no excuse about why they couldn't get out. Even for an illiquid stock, 100 shares is nothing. Institutional traders, on the other hand, may have a million share position with which to work. It takes some time to unravel such a large position, not one click of a mouse, or in the case of most active intraday traders, a tap of a hotkey, exceedingly faster than clicking a mouse, and losses can be significant. Intraday traders trade with much smaller size and can hit the bids for a very small loss. In fact, a good intraday trader can take numerous losses of as little as one penny. So we must learn to exploit one of our huge advantages, and this means hitting a stock when it trades against our exit price. Boy Genius's mentor instructed him to stop letting his losses run past 20 cents. His book was littered with these. When the problem continued, I had to call a private meeting with him. We discussed some of his trades from the day before. I explained the importance of hitting stocks that trade against him, even though Steve and I had covered this in training. When we teach this principle to new traders, I always ask with my voice raised, "What do you do when a stock hits your exit price?" And our new traders respond quickly and in unison, "Hit the stock." And I animatedly growl, "That is right. You hit the stock." After our talk, Boy Genius was still not convinced. I asked him, "Do you understand why this is important?" Boy Genius replied, "I am not sure that that is the most efficient way to trade." Did I just hear that? This genius has been trading for a few days, and all of a sudden he is an expert on trading efficiency? I bit my lip, restrained what I really wanted to say, and patiently discussed the following trade. Boy Genius had bought a stock in front of a support level. This was excellent, just as we teach it in our training program. However, the support level broke, and the stock traded lower. I retaught that when the support level broke, that he must sell. And he said, "But how do you know that the stock is really going to go down?" Right then, I knew we had a problem. He had not been listening. We had covered this probably 50 times already. I patiently explained again, "You bought the stock because it was holding a support level. This is the reason why you entered the trade. When the support level drops, your reason for being in the trade no longer exists, and you must exit. You cannot be sure that the stock will go down, but that is irrelevant. We play the percentages. We make trades where our win rate is 60-70% with a downside of 1 and an upside of 5. When the stock does not act like we expect, then we exit and start over. And we are not in the business of losing money to prove that we were right. So when the stock drops below the support level, you have no other choice but to hit out of the stock. Holding a stock below support is now gambling, and that is not what we do here." Before he left, I really laid into him. He was the most talented trader in his class, yet his results were the worst. Didn't it occur to him that this didn't make any sense? I let him know that questioning the validity of such a fundamental trading concept concerned me. It was a sign that he was not listening. There's always time to experiment later, but at the start, it's most important to just learn how to trade. He agreed and commented that he would get better. A few weeks later, Steve called Boy Genius into his office to discuss a trading mistake. I had something to discuss with Steve and walked into his office, not knowing he was talking with Boy Genius. I stuck around and listened to their discussion. I quickly noticed Boy Genius would cut off Steve whenever he made a point, and didn't stop. Finally, I cut Boy Genius off from cutting Steve off and angrily interjected, "Why do you keep cutting Steve off? When I was in law school, we learned to immediately stop talking when an appellate judge spoke. When Steve talks, do not interrupt him. Just listen. Clearly, I was furious at Boy Genius. A lack of respect shows up in your trading. If you disrespect a partner and your financial backer, then you will do the same to the market. And not to sound streetish in a gangster sense, but if you disrespect the market, it will not respect you back. Consider these memorable lines from Jules Winfield in the movie Pulp Fiction. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the iniquities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who, in the name of charity and goodwill, shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who would attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee. A month later, Boy Genius's mentor asked to talk with me again because Boy Genius was still making the same mistakes. His trading losses compiled. Compounding his trading losses was Boy Genius's nerve to write his mentor and Steve an email explaining his disagreement with some of the fundamental trading concepts we preached. Excuse me? 2 months into trading, no profits, and he's questioning the lessons the market has taught us? Now, this will certainly test one's patience. I would have liked to see Gandhi work with this know-it-all. Steve was thinking along the same lines. He sent me an email commenting on Boy Genius's theories with simply, "If all of those things make sense, then why is he the least profitable trader in his class?" I suggested we have another meeting with Boy Genius, this time with his mentor at his side. I was not prepared to be as surprised during this meeting as I was. His mentor started with a review of Boy Genius's work and his weaknesses. Now, not only was Boy Genius refusing to hit stocks that traded against him, but he was doubling down. He was making progress, and getting worse. His mentor re-emphasized the importance of cutting his losses, but Boy Genius still wouldn't do so. And then it was time for Boy Genius to respond. He replied with what he had said a few months ago. "I just don't see how it is efficient to hit stocks that trade against me. The stock may come back. So why hit the stock?" His mentor rolled his eyes. I was experiencing deja vu. Was there a window we could throw him out of? Would we get caught? What the hell do you say to someone like this? For about the 100th time, I explained why he needed to hit stocks that traded against him. His mentor supplemented my points. Our logic was irrefutable. I said, "Look, you can try to figure things out by yourself. And since you are exceptionally bright, you just might. But it will take you years. I am teaching you the fundamentals that I was taught by the market. I'm not making this stuff up. Steve and I did not sit around our office and say, 'Wouldn't it be hysterical if we made up a bunch of arbitrary fundamentals, made a bunch of people follow these rules, and let them trade our money?' You can fight what we teach, but in time you are just going to learn that what we teach is correct. These are just things the market has taught us. I do not ask you to follow our instruction because I am some egomaniac. I could honestly care less whether you listen to me or not. But if you don't, then you're going to struggle, and struggle needlessly." I ended our meeting with, "You are exceptionally bright. You have a background that normally excels on our desk. I am looking forward to seeing your progress." A few days later, this new trader sent me an email resigning. Thoughtfully, he remarked that he did not want to lose the firm any more money. I was surprised and disappointed. We were prepared to keep working with him, perhaps foolishly. Boy Genius had too much talent to fail, and I actually liked him personally. It's hard for some new traders to understand that trading may not be something their skill set will allow them to just figure out. And my sense is that this was the issue with this new trader. The fact remained that he should have never failed. It bothers me to this day that we could not persuade Boy Genius to just listen. What a needless waste for us, and, more importantly, for him. They don't love trading. I sit in my office interviewing an ambitious trading prospect. He looks me squarely in the eyes and declares, "I will outwork everyone on your desk." At this point, I rub my eyes, experience a nasty case of déjà vu, and try not to show skepticism. You see, no one has ever left an interview without uttering this phrase. Never. "I will outwork everyone on your desk" is a statement most frequently uttered during any interview at a prop firm. There is no greater line an employer can hear other than, "I'll work for free in perpetuity." Mind you, that would probably violate some kind of labor law, but as you know, I'm not a practicing lawyer. What boss doesn't want a hard-working rank and file? But then they start their training class. By the simple laws of physics, not everyone can work the hardest, but those who do earn a firm leader's respect immediately. Based on the routine I'm about to describe, you would think traders are professional athletes who train 6 to 8 hours a day in the off-season, preparing for a lucrative season both statistically and financially. Well, they kind of are. For example, at one prop firm, they watch film of their trading daily. They keep a detailed trading journal. They prepare with urgency for every open. They review their work in their heads religiously. They spend 15 minutes every day performing visualization exercises. They watch tape of their trading on the weekends. On the weekends! When most are playing touch football and getting drunk, these guys are watching film. We often hear stories of how a zealous work ethic pays off in spades in school, sports, and life. It's the same in trading. Prop traders have learned that their performance when the bell rings is determined by the work that they do before the market opens. Some teachers become frustrated by those who do not work hard. While most encourage a mentoring culture, at the end of the day, the teachers want to see an effort. But I have a different theory. Those new traders who do not work hard do not do so because they do not love trading. Few know what it is really like to be a trader until they trade. A prop firm can share a typical day in an interview. One of its traders can explain his day during a phone conversation. But there is no way of simulating what it is really like to trade professionally until you do it. And one thing that some interviewees gloss over is an explanation of the work that is required. Some just do not understand how hard their firm will work them. New traders train from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day at firms that offer rigorous training, and they cover a lot. At the end of the day, most trainees have given it everything they have. As we introduced at the inception of this chapter, some like the idea of simply being a trader. It seems cool to them. They've read back issues of now-defunct Trader Monthly and see themselves on the cover with a model in their arms and a private jet in the background. It's as if it brings ultimate respectability in the eyes of their peers. And let's be honest, on more than one occasion, women who have just met me got a lot more interested when I told them I'm a trader. Some would-be trainees envision the rich trader lifestyle that they will lead. And this dream can become a reality. But none of this will happen unless you are willing to pay the price. And some just are not willing to work hard. There is grunt work that needs to be done every day. At the end of the trading day, your eyes are tired. Sometimes my eyes start twitching over the weekend from a week of staring at my screens. My wrists constantly throb because of the excessive typing I do, searching for the next great trade. I often have to stop trading and just rub my wrists to relieve the pain. By the end of the trading day on Friday, I feel like I have taken 4 consecutive constitutional law exams on. Some just do not want to watch some more tape of their trading after the close. This requires a serious commitment. Some just do not want to go through all of their trades after the bell. There is so much to do before and after the close. You will not do all of this work unless you love trading. You just won't. The problem is that if you do not do all that the market requires, you will almost certainly fail. The butcher, a hard worker who never worked hard as a trader. Let me introduce a new trainee to highlight the difficulty of succeeding if you do not love trading. He was a former college basketball player. Let's call him the butcher, for reasons about to become apparent. The butcher graduated from an excellent liberal arts school. He was unusually calm during his interview. Controlling his emotions would not be an issue. I liked him. He swore to a trading partner he would work hard. As proof of his work ethic, he cited his improvement as a college basketball player. The butcher progressed from a freshman his coach warned would be cut to a solid contributor by his senior year. I was convinced. There were no red flags with the butcher during his training. Word starts to spread from our core traders to the new traders that if they do not work hard, they will be asked to leave. One of our traders, G, likes to guess which new trader is most likely to be fired first. Even though we make market bets for a living, side bets on who will be fired are only a natural extension of what we do. Sometimes he greases me for insider hints. I had nothing. I did remember the butcher stopping by my office and asking if I was happy with his work. I thought this was odd. We let them know if their work is subpar immediately. But new traders do not seek me out to ask if their work is satisfactory. And as Steve explains, our new traders are usually scared to death of me. Most keep their distance in the first few weeks. Like some coaches, we break our trainees down when they start training and then build them up before they start. Yet here the butcher was, sticking his head in to talk with me. Once his class started to trade live, his results after the first week were not as good as expected. Worse still, the butcher was not positive a single day. After the end of the first month, the butcher was negative every day save one. At the end of the month, the butcher popped his head in again. After that kind of month, he needed to talk with me, and I was impressed how he offered himself up so easily. Following the butcher's lead, we spent the next 30 minutes going over the process for being fired. Like some bizarre masochist, the butcher was fascinated with exactly how this would work. He was searching for clues whether he was in jeopardy of being asked to leave. Look, no one gets fired in the first 4 months unless they continually do stuff that is unacceptable. Doing poorly is not grounds for termination. But now we are 11 weeks into our relationship, and the only conversations the butcher initiated were related to my impression of his work. Perhaps it's a millennial generation thing, where people the butcher's age need constant feedback about whether or not they're doing well. Thankfully, his mom didn't call me. Yet there were no questions about what he could do better. There were no specific trading questions. The butcher just fished for clues about whether he was on the hot seat. But just by witnessing his behavior, I could tell he wasn't long for SMB. Our traders watched tape after the close. The butcher was out too early to be watching tape. Our traders have a serious pre-market routine, arriving to the office around 7:45 a.m. to prepare. The butcher arrived at 8:30 a.m. We do not consider this late. We allow for the possibility that some may prepare at home. We hold a special training call for new traders before our a.m. meeting to ensure that they understand how to find stocks in play. Each new trader is asked for his best trading idea. The butcher often offered the same idea as a new trader who went before him. I asked a senior trader to check his trading journal. He did not keep one. During the trading day, he led the desk in checking ESPN's NBA homepage. During his second month, he was positive one day. We could train 100 traders, and the butcher's results would still rank at the bottom. In fact, I propose that 80% of the general population could sit on our desk without any formal training and generate more positive trading days. Moreover, the butcher was stopped out, trading parlance for reaching one's loss limit, close to 50% of his trading days. We would send over traders to offer suggestions. He would listen, but the butcher rarely asked follow-up questions. He was never spotted actually enacting the recommendations of other successful traders. During our trade casts, I challenge our traders to expect more from themselves. For example, we suggest traders keep a detailed trading journal. I will remark, if you're not keeping a detailed trading journal, then please do not pretend that you are competing. At other times, when I learn that some traders are slacking, then during a trade cast, I will remark, If you do not love trading, then please go find something else to do. There are others begging to train with us. Give your spot to them. We talk with our traders at the end of each month. I was ready to tell the butcher that his results were like nothing I had seen. Before we had a chance, I received an email from him offering his resignation. He shared that trading was not his true passion. Amen. Now, the butcher is a hard worker. He became an excellent college basketball player through hard work, and he is a very good person. I heard he landed a good job following his resignation from SMB. Of course he did. He will be successful when he finds his true passion. But trading was not it. He loved basketball. That is why he spent hours working on his game for no pay and little recognition at a liberal arts college not known for its basketball program. But he never had a chance as a trader because he did not love trading, and there is nothing that a trading coach can do to overcome that. They can't hit stocks that trade against them. If you examine the work of most successful intraday traders, they all take many small losses. Their results are littered with numerous small losses of 7 cents, 5 cents, 3 cents, and even 1 cent. Most good intraday traders have few losses of more than 30 cents. Most trades work for you right away. One of the fundamentals taught by active trading prop firms is to hit stocks that trade against you. Those who never master this fundamental will fail. Before every trade, you must develop a trading plan for where you will exit if your stock trades against you. For example, in the spring of 2009, I was trading WFC. WFC had just released positive earnings. WFC had gapped up on the open and then started an intraday downtrend. At 18:25, WFC would not lift the offer, indicating a huge sell order was pending. So I shorted WFC. If it hit 18:30, I was exiting, gathering information, reevaluating, but moving on to my next trade. For those interested, it did not touch 18:30, and I covered WFC at 17:60 when the selling pattern dissipated. With this trade, my exit price didn't hit, but my plan was firmly in place if 18:30 was breached. Smiley. Smiling back to Hong Kong. One of our former traders, Smiley, brings a smile to my face as I remember him. He wore a perpetual smile with positive energy that spread across our trading desk. Smiley loved trading and had an uncanny resemblance to Ichiro Suzuki of the Seattle Mariners. I can imagine him now, smiling on the trading desk, trading his Google. But he had one big issue. He could not hit stocks that traded against him. Smiley loved his Google. What's not to like with the volume and volatility Google offers? We had just started as a firm and allowed our new traders more autonomy. This was our mistake. Certainly today we would not permit a new trader to trade Google, as it moves too erratically for a new trader to handle. But we were young and learning. Smiley was not trading other stocks well, so there was not much to lose for either party. Smiley is perhaps one of my top 10 favorite people who have ever traded near me. I have never seen anyone so happy to be on a trading desk. Our upstart desk was grabbing drinks after the close one day, and Smiley offered a long soliloquy on how he loved trading. English was not his first language. Think Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live saying, "Baseball has been very good to me," in broken English, but Smiley would replace baseball with trading. At times it was challenging for Smiley to communicate with us. Maybe that is why Smiley smiled so often, masking his inability to communicate. So we are having drinks, and this quiet guy just couldn't stop talking. Smiley explained that back in Hong Kong he was a video graphics expert. He had worked on numerous movies. In fact, Smiley had recently turned down a job to work on Mission Impossible 3. Smiley mocked even the thought of accepting this job. Proudly, he exclaimed, "I want to do what I love, and I love trading." We worked with Smiley on hitting stocks that traded against him. We first started with the simple instruction, "Smiley, if a stock trades against your exit price, then hit it, please." He nodded his head energetically. Then we noticed Smiley had opened up a position. I would ask, "Hey, Smiley, what is your exit price for Google?"